Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.
I glanced at the door before shutting my eyes for a second and prayed that no one would walk in. Donna opened the shop a few minutes early for us on short notice. I called her the night before. I sat on a stool with my back to the mirror, looking at Joe and Paula standing in front of me. "Say hi, honey," Joe directed as he held up his phone with the camera, pointing right at me. Donna stood behind me with the electric razor in her hand. She said, "Okay, are you ready?" I nodded my head yes as I sucked in some air and held it. It was easier not to cry if I didn't talk or breathe. I spent the previous 18 hours preparing myself for this. I knew it was the right thing to do. There was no turning back. "When in doubt, cut it out. It's only hair, it grows," was something my mom, the hairdresser, would say when someone hummed and hawed over a haircut. That was her way of telling you, "Oh, get over it." So I got over it, and Donna started shaving. I watched my hair fall to the floor. Joe had the camera on me the whole time so my family could watch it happen live. I heard a cute little voice come out of the phone speaker. "You look beautiful, Auntie Chrissy." It was my cousin Nathan's 4-year-old son, Hunter, cheering me on. That's all I needed to hear to open up the floodgates as I combined tears with smiles. I was feeling the love and support. I was happy about the movie star wig that I brought with me to wear home, and I was relieved to get this part of the journey out of the way. But please grow back. It was done. It was over, and I didn't have to worry about my hair falling out anymore. Hair today, gone tomorrow. Another mumism. Donna quickly put the nylon cap on my hairless head before putting on my wig. I turned around and looked in the mirror at my new self and fussed with the fake hair around my face. Well, it looked like a wig to me. I figured it would always look like a wig to me, because I knew it was. I could decide to go without a wig if I wanted to. I could wear some cool head wraps or the black chemo cap I bought at the shop the week before. I decided to give this wig a try. So Joe went off to the studio, and Paula took me and my big thick head of hair out to lunch. Welcome, everybody, to Accent On. Good evening. My name is Chrissy Lomax, and I'm honored to be sitting in as a guest host for Ilona every Monday in December from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. I'm grateful to Ilona for providing me this opportunity to create a forum of experience to help in the many areas in life that are affected by a cancer diagnosis. What I just read to you was from a chapter called Hair Today, Gone Tomorrow, from my yet-to-be-published book I just finished writing since finishing cancer treatment 15 months ago called Another Interruption, My Journey Through HER2-New Breast Cancer. I'm not a doctor or a medical professional. I'm coming to you from a place of experience. I have the experience of a fitness professional, a nutrition specialist, a Pilates instructor, a marathon coach, a weight loss coach, a motivational speaker, and now, most importantly, a survivor. I beat HER2-new positive breast cancer. I know what it takes to get to a finish line. I look at this interruption of my life as the marathon of my life, for my life. I had to prepare, train, endure, listen to and properly nourish my body, focus on one goal, visualize the finish line, and trust my team to help me get there and support me. There's no way that after everything I've gone through in my life that cancer was going to take me down. My hope is that this program will inspire you to live your best life cancer-free. My mission is to provide a cancer patient, a cancer survivor, a partner or family member of a cancer patient or survivor, or anyone looking to maybe take steps to avoid diagnosis, support, ideas, inspiration to help make it through treatment, recovery, and healing. For tonight's show, I would like to thank Susan Jacobson, who is with the LGSH LLP accounting firm, and Hans Korsmo for sponsoring this hour on LA Talk Radio's Accent On in honor of Carol and John Saunders. Carol is in treatment for breast cancer and needs to hear us say, "You can do it, Carol." Yeah, stay present, do the best you can today, and then just get up tomorrow and do it again. Okay, and that's what it's about. We just have to keep going and just focus on the day. One day at a time really does make a difference, and stay present. I'd like to introduce my guests for tonight's show. Thank you so much for coming down. First of all, thank you to my husband, Joe Primo, who was able to be here again tonight, so I didn't have to worry with all those. Thank you for taking care of that. I have enough to deal with my guests here. Okay, I'd like to introduce you to Linda Bradford, and Linda owns a private affair in Thousand Oaks, and Linda helps so many breast cancer patients with their bras, prosthetics, everything they need to do to make them feel better.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so this is Linda, and also we have Tracy Astor here, and Tracy is not only a registered nurse at Los Robles Hospital helping with cancer patients, Tracy is also a cancer survivor. And, well, she's going to tell us her story. There's a lot more to it than that for both of these ladies. I'm just giving you a quick introduction. But let's start with Linda. I met Linda years ago. I have been a fitness professional for years and a marathon coach, a fitness trainer, as I mentioned in my introduction. And so one of the most important things to make sure you have good support for, along with your feet when you're out there pounding the pavement, doing endurance training, is also a good bra. Women need to have good brassieres on, good support, good sports bras when you're out there to support yourself. So I would always come in with my clients or teammates or send them to Linda to make sure she got them in good supportive upper body wear for their marathons. And so that's the way I always walked into Linda's store. And when I would go in there all the time, there were always breast cancer patients in there that Linda was helping. And coming from an area of always fundraising for cancer research because of the loss that I had when I started fundraising for cancer back in the early 90s, I was always interested in meeting cancer survivors and finding out ways that they are making it through their treatment. It's always been interesting to me to find out how we can raise more money for more FDA approvals. So I was always talking to Linda about what she did in her store and asking her her clients as well about their situation and what they're going through. And so for me to walk into a private affair for the first time as a breast cancer patient, I have to say it was very emotional for me to not walk in as the healthy, fit trainer that I used to be to then walking in as a cancer patient. And Linda took the best care of me through all of my cancer treatment with chemotherapy, my surgery, and then also through radiation, where it was really important to be in the proper upper body wear while I went through 35 rounds of radiation treatment, getting burned as well. So Linda, thank you so much for coming and being here on the show, and we can possibly help somebody out in a situation here with that.
Pleasure.
So tell us how you got started in this.
Well, I had a friend who had a business similar to the one that I have, and I was looking for a job, and I just called her because I was in need of a job, and she asked me to come in, and she said, "Come on in, I need someone to work with me," and so I went, and I had never done anything close to fitting anyone with a bra in my whole life. So, because I used to work on airplanes. So the difference between that.
Wow. On airplanes.
But I have to tell you, the service that we provided through that business became like a mission, sort of. It was kind of like we had a purpose for going to work every day. And so I saw the great need in that also, and cancer, breast cancer doesn't seem to have slowed down much. The surgeries are different now, the treatments are different now, there's a lot more ways of saving breast tissue and so forth, but it's still pretty predominant
Absolutely. It used to be like in the, I think, the 70s, even the 80s, it was 1 in 11 women were diagnosed with breast cancer, and I think now it's 1 in 8.
I think it's 1 in 8, yes.
Uh-huh. Invasive breast cancer. So that was like 30 years ago when you started in the industry of helping breast cancer patients.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And we are able to help you before you have your surgery. We can provide with camisoles that will help you when you come out of surgery, help you to get the 4 to 6 weeks through that. And there are just so many things that we can help you with because there are a lot of things you don't feel like you have control over.
Right. So now you started 30 years ago and for this, and then you started your own shop.
Yes, we opened up in Thousand Oaks in 1991.
Wow.
Yes. So I've been there 28 years.
So you've really seen a change in that community as well.
I've seen it in the community. I've seen it in the insurance companies, all of the different changes that have gone on in the prosthetic companies and bra fitting and all of that. Everything has changed.
Yes.
And it's a lot of it's for the good. There are so many more choices now.
So tell me where the changes have happened that are so much better now for breast cancer patients that are being diagnosed.
Well, they're not taking as much tissue out. There's less invasive surgery is what I guess I'm trying to say. And reconstruction, of course. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of that. And but we have a lot of choices of breast forms that we can use. We have a lot of different choices of bras. We also do a lot of sewing in the store, so we can take things that you already have and we can fix them.
Wow.
So,
adjust it to be fitted.
There's a lot of different choices and to make you feel a little bit more confident.
Right. So have you had a lot of, like this week, for example, tell me how many new breast cancer patients might have come into your shop this week?
Well, I think I've probably had 4 last week. I had one on Saturday. And yes, from the beginning, it's a very, very scary feeling of being diagnosed and not knowing what to expect at all. And so gratefully, she came in and I was able to at least ease her fears about what she would be wearing and how she would she would present herself to the public afterwards and how she could get through this comfortably.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's a part of your body. It's like, oh, it's going to change now?
Yes.
You know, like, wow, yeah, I was just getting used to this, you know, like it's a scary thing.
Yes,
yeah,
it
very
is.
Scary.
It's very scary. Yes.
So you're providing a really nice safe place anyway, because I do know that now. I know it coming into your shop from an athletic point of view, and then also from a breast cancer patient, and it's a very welcoming place, and you feel safe as well, and that's another thing.
Well,
like I can't imagine going into nothing against department store lingerie departments that they have, but it's so much better to go to a specific
very
private shop. Yes, that specialized. Thank you, Tracy.
Mm-hmm.
That can actually take care of everything, and you do help with the insurance, because is it complicated?
It can be, but I pretty much take care of all of the insurance billing. So it's easier for me to do it than to have the clients try to do it. They have enough to deal with, and so if we can get on a regular steady course of billing, then it's much easier for me to do it for them.
That's huge.
That is huge.
Because I will tell you that it isn't easy to try and get your claims in for these things. Because now tonight's show, yes, we were going to have a wig expert on tonight as well, which is why I wore one of my favorite wigs that I would wear when I didn't have any hair. And now I kind of tucked all this curly hair I now have underneath this wig. Some unforeseen circumstances came up, and our wig expert could not be here this evening. Hopefully she can come later on in this series by the end of the month. But when I did get my first wig, you know, your insurance will cover a portion. You should get a reimbursement. And, you know, that was 2.5 years ago, and I'm still waiting for that reimbursement. And I sent it in twice, and I just don't think I'm going to be getting that. So to have somebody there to actually take care of the insurance detail for you, I just didn't think of it till now. I never did get that reimbursement back.
Yeah.
And I actually submitted it 2 or 3 times, but it just didn't come. So Yes, what a difference that makes to have somebody help you with all that. And there is so many other things to deal with. Mm-hmm. And yes, the sense of control is something that is very scary, because when you are diagnosed, you know, and Tracy, you will agree with this, that all of a sudden you just feel like, what are you doing to me, body? Like, you're what's going on here? I don't have any control over this. Absolutely. And it's a little scary. And then when you hear the drugs you're going to be having, and I remember Joe and I sitting there when my oncologist, Dr. Ashuri, was reading off the list of the drugs that I was going to be having, and I investigated everything, you know. Wow, all three or four of these drugs, hair loss, okay. Yeah. You know, all right, well, and no control over that. And, well, I know some people will say, oh, yes, you can put the penguin cap or some ice cold cap that goes on your head, and you can rent those. And they're very, very expensive per week. I'm not sure how much, hundreds of dollars each week. And then you have to put on this frozen cap that stays on for quite a while and freezes everything and stops the hair loss. Although I have seen people that have gone through the pain and suffering to save their hair. And there's still bald patches under there, you know. So I don't know. I thought it's only hair it grows, right? I was thinking of my mother thinking, well, you'll just get a new head of hair. And I did, you know, different hair. But, you know, that was the one thing that was scary, thinking I don't have any control over that.
As women, we're so used to having our hair. It's part of our identity.
I guess. So now that you're speaking, Tracy, let me introduce you. So welcome, Tracy Astor, to the show.
Thank you for
having
me.
And if you could tell everybody about you.
Thank you for having me, Chrissy.
You're welcome.
My name is Tracy, and I was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's follicular lymphoma in July of 2017. I'm a nurse, and I had a few uncomfortable discomfort feelings in my epigastric area, which is in my upper abdomen. And as a nurse, we're the worst patients. I just kind of brushed it off and thought, it's nothing, it'll go away, it hasn't been there that long, you know, it'll go away. Well, it persisted for a few months, to the point where when I was sleeping at night, I could feel this strange feeling in my abdomen area.
Were you thinking it might be like ulcer or something like that?
I thought maybe GERD or, you know, some kind of reflux. It seemed like when I laid down, it was worse. If I turned over on my sides, I could feel, it felt like something was in there. Mm-hmm. That's the only way I could really explain it, like something was in there. So, long story short, after a few months went by, I decided to speak with one of the gastroenterologists that I work with, Dr. Kumar Desai, and I told him what my symptoms were, and he said, make an appointment and we'll figure it out. So I did, and that was in July, mid-July. I went on a Friday, I specifically remember, because I was going to a wedding that evening, and I had work off that day, so I thought I'll go get my ultrasound, go get my blood drawn, bada bing, bada boom, we'll be done. Yeah. So I did that, went to the wedding, had a great time, came to work on Monday and said, hey, Dr. Desai, am I going to live? You know, what's going on? And he said, I need to talk to you.
Ooh.
And my body just froze. And he pulled me aside into the hallway at work, and he said, I have an order here for you. I want you to go have a CT scan with and without contrast. We need to rule out some things. And I said, I just immediately started crying. I was so scared.
Yeah, yeah.
I said, what are we ruling out? What is going on?
Yeah.
I have no idea what you're talking about. He said, we have to rule out lymphoma. And everything he said after that, I think just, I couldn't hear what he was saying.
Right.
So I was crying. He hugged me and said, come on, we can do this. You know, let's just get some tests done. Let's figure out what's going on, and then we'll go from there. And I immediately, my boss was on medical leave at the time, so my coworker who was in charge, I went to her and told her what was going on, and she said, what's Rick's number? Let me call Rick, your husband, because I couldn't even talk. I was so upset. And so she called him for me, and I told him what was happening and what the doctor had said we had to rule out, and he came immediately. We went
over, and there was your other set of ears.
And there I was like, I have no idea what was going on. And he said, okay, just, you know, tell me, what did he say? And I told him. And so we took the orders and went straight over to the hospital. I actually work at the surgery center next door to the hospital. And I had a CT scan with and without contrast. And it was just a week and a half or so of just complete, I was numb, I think, to the whole thing.
Yes.
We had no idea what type of lymphoma I had. I had no idea if it was Hodgkin's, non-Hodgkin's.
It's paralyzing.
It was so paralyzing.
You're paralyzed.
I was so scared.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my God, I'm going to die. I have kids. I have a husband. I have a family. I just went to the dark side. And so it was just a week's worth of test after test after test. I mean,
right.
It seemed I had to have.
And you didn't work at this time.
I stopped working that day.
Yeah.
And thank God the administrator we had at the time was, you know, really nice and just said, whatever you need to do, you just go do it. And everyone at work was very supportive. I mean, from day one, just very blessed. I have amazing coworkers. And so I had an endoscopic ultrasound with a fine needle aspiration. So they go down your throat with a scope and poke a needle through your stomach and get some pathology there out of your lymph nodes and send it to pathology. So I had a PET scan as well. And then once the pathology was determined, which took a few days, the doctor, Dr. Sam Slomowitz, he's my oncologist, called me. His office called and said, let's set up an appointment so we can go over everything. So my husband went with me. And my, what was that? Sorry.
I did.
So, long story short, I went to his office. He said to me, tell me everything you know so far about what you have or what you think you have. And, of course, I know just enough to know enough, but not everything, you know, as a nurse. And my mom's an oncology nurse, retired oncology nurse, so she was an amazing help. I mean, gave me great support.
Yeah.
Oh, you don't have that. You're fine. You're not going to have that. You know, I mean, she was just trying to be very supportive.
Yes.
And she was. And he said, well, let me tell you this. What you have is not a death sentence. And soon as he said that, my husband and I, you could see the looks on our faces and our shoulders just kind of relaxed a little bit.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh my God, okay, I can hear what you're going to tell me now, I think. So I had stage 3 follicular lymphoma.
Wow.
He had to do a bone marrow biopsy.
Ouch.
Which is very painful.
Yeah.
I don't recommend that to anybody. Feels like you got kicked by a mule in your backside.
Yeah.
Where they kind of drill core into your iliac bone on your backside. And thankfully, I didn't have cancer in my bones, which was great.
Yes.
But the kind of cancer I have, the non-Hodgkin's follicular lymphoma, it was like a grade 2, 1 to 2, which is not extremely fast growing, which is good and bad. I mean, it's not bad, but it's good because it's so slow growing. So he said I'd had it for years, probably. And then in my brain, I went to, okay, what did I do? What happened? He says, don't even try doing that. You're never gonna figure it out. It's I'm not the typical patient, I guess, that gets this disease.
Yeah.
He told me it was generally someone like a 65-year-old male. And I thought, wow, it's not hereditary.
No.
Where did it come from?
Yeah.
I don't know.
I know. And that's the first thing that comes, like, what did I do?
Yes. I'm like, is it all the Big Macs I used to eat? Or
I know.
Diet Coke
and my oncologist, he said, one thing I want you to know it's not your fault.
Yes, exactly.
Honestly, he says, you didn't do anything. Because it's like I'm sitting there thinking, okay, well, this extra weight I've got on me,
yeah.
you know, like, really, it's like yeah. all these things
it's
can
cause... It's a rabbit hole.
Yeah.
And it can send, it sent me into really some dark places.
Absolutely, absolutely.
It was difficult
but
in that way.
Now, you started treatment. How soon after that did you start treatment?
Well, actually, after I got the diagnosis, I went to City of Hope mm-hmm. to get a second opinion.
Okay, good.
And I went there and saw Dr. Bowie, I think was her name, and she basically told me the pathology was the same as what mm-hmm. Los Robles was telling mm-hmm. me. And that was important to me because I didn't want to have to drive all the way out there when I live in Thousand Oaks. So,
right.
So once we found out everybody was in agreement, he told me, Dr. Slomowitz told me that technically I didn't even have to treat it if I didn't want to.
Wow.
That it was slow growing enough that if it wasn't bothering me,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't treat it.
But he said it could have been there for years?
Yes.
You were saying that before we went on the air, that you might have been walking around with this for years.
Yeah, many, probably, he doesn't know exactly, but the way it was growing, I probably had it for years. So because it had been causing me some discomfort, that's why he thought we should treat it.
Yeah.
He also told me that I was relatively young enough that I would probably have to treat it again,
yeah.
maybe even a couple times in yeah. my lifetime, because it's okay. a type of thing that will come back. So
wow. Yeah.
So I had...
So that hangs on you.
Yeah, that kind of hangs in the background.
Yeah.
I went and had... I had 6 months of treatment.
You had a port implant.
I had a port uh-huh. implanted mm-hmm. at my surgery center where I work.
Yes,
so
you knew everybody
I know people in great places. So Dr. Kadamian put my yeah. port in, and I love her. She's amazing. And then I started my treatment, I believe, a week later.
Oh, good, yeah.
And the drugs I was on was Treanda, which is also bendamustine, and Rituxan.
Oh, okay.
So there was a chance that I could lose my hair, but it was a small chance.
Mm-hmm.
So I was, you know, waiting to see if that was going to happen or not.
It's true. You do wait.
I've got cancer. Yeah. I got to lose my hair, right?
That's right.
So the treatments were over 2 days every 2 weeks. So I would go in, mm-hmm. sit there all day the first day. And mm-hmm. my husband went to every single treatment with me. And my kids came to a few as well. My mom did as well. And I would sit there and sleep and, mm-hmm. you know, read and keep myself busy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I would go home. I had a reaction to the Rituxan initially, so they would give me Decadron, which is a steroid,
mm-hmm.
and Benadryl as well, which is because I was having
Dexa
a reaction.
Dragon.
Yeah. So I was so amped when I would leave there. First, I would be asleep,
Woo!
You know, just snoring practically.
It was great for cleaning the house, those steroids, yes. Because before I would go into my treatment every time, because, you know, I would be a 10-day tunnel I'd go into from the first day of treatment. Treatment would be 4 days. And then I would stay isolated for 10 days before I would go out into public again, just because my counts were low and I wanted to stay safe.
Right.
So I was just isolated that whole time. So before the treatment, before that 10 days, it would be the Dexadragon, the dexamethasone.
Yes.
And boy, you can clean that house so fast
I don't clean my own house anyway, so I never did that.
That's how I got my exercise in and treatment.
There you go.
Yes.
There you go.
Yeah.
So I would go home after and try to eat something. I just felt really nauseous for a while. I was extremely tired.
Yeah.
And for about a week or so, by the time the next treatment would roll around, I would start to feel better right before that.
Yeah. That's right. And then we'd go back into the tunnel.
Go back into the next.
Yeah.
So I did that for 6 months. And, you know, it's funny. I had such great support from my family and friends. And then I had some friends and people who I thought would be, you know, more engaged weren't. And I think I realized that sometimes people don't really know what to say to you when
you're
have cancer.
Yes, you're right. Yeah.
And it's not anything, you know.
No, they don't know what to say, and instead of just saying something, they don't say anything, and then and that can be hurtful too.
Yeah, it feels
strange. Because you just feel like people don't care.
Because I'm the type of person that if someone I know finds out they have cancer or someone died or something, it must be the nurse in me, I go there immediately. I mean, if one of my best friends said, you know, I have cancer or something like that, I would just, you know, I would go there. I would want to be there for them. And
well, you're a nurse too, and,
I know,
and we're all so different. Yeah,
that's true. That's true.
Yeah,
and I had to remember that.
Nurse.
I had to remember that.
Yeah.
So
you're always there.
I'm
for
always
people. Yeah.
trying to fix things and fix people. So, but like I said, I had people bring me food and friends that would come over and just sit with me. You know, my mom would take me out. We'd go driving around, and you know.
So now tell me, post treatment and everything, like me. You really went into a let's not get it back lifestyle, because yours, like your doctor said, you could be treating this again more than once in the future, right?
So what I did, I tried to educate myself about where food comes from, and that sent me down a rabbit hole that, oh, wow, I was shocked at all the different things I was reading about and finding out about.
Well, did you know that there's over 4? Yeah, there's so many chemicals that are banned, over 1,400 in Europe and other countries that are not banned in this country, that are in our foods, in our cosmetics, in our personal care products, and it's so important to really take a look at what am I putting on my skin and what am I putting in my body, and that the first thing that I did, and you did that as well, is eliminate sugar.
That
eliminate from everything, and there's sugar
in
so
everything.
Many things. Yes,
absolutely,
you can't believe
everything.
That.
Bacon
and,
has
and
sugar.
It's crazy. I know. Yes.
Lots
so do
sugar.
Breadcrumbs and mustard and panko breadcrumbs. Who knew they'd have sugar in there?
Right.
But that's the thing is read the nutritional breakdown on the product, but then read the ingredients too, because sometimes it'll say no sugar in the nutritional breakdown, but then when you read the ingredients, there'll be sugar in the ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
So it just depends on the percentages and everything. So really have to check what you're putting into your body. I mean, some people are more interested of what fuel goes in their car than they are what fuel goes into their bodies.
True.
You know, so there's so many things that we can take control over of how we feed our bodies, and especially with skincare and makeup. I mean, it's unbelievable the chemicals that are in skincare and makeup that are cancer causing.
Mm-hmm.
And I use a couple different apps on my phone. I have an app called Think Dirty, and the Think Dirty app is amazing. And it was created by a young woman. She's out of Toronto, and you can go in there and you can get the UPC scanner up on your phone and scan that item before you bring it home, if it's worthy to come in your basket and come home with you from the store. It'll grade it. There's a grade from green, 0 to 10, yellow, 0 to 10, and red, 0 to 10. And I don't buy anything for skincare or makeup to bring home for us that's any higher than green, 0 to 3.
Wow.
You cannot believe all the stuff I had to throw out when I started learning all of this. And, you know, I've been a professional makeup artist for years, too. So all of that stuff had to go. And so it's really amazing. And it's really hard to find anything on the floor of a department store in that makeup department that's not going to be highly toxic and have cancer-causing ingredients in the product itself. Mascara is a really big one to take a look at. You know, there's something in mascara that's has something in it called carbon black, cancer causing. And I switched all my makeup I'm using and found great non-toxic products. But I would recommend anybody that wants to clean up your life, I'm telling you, whether you have had cancer or not and just want to clean up your life from all kinds of neurological disorders that can happen, who knows, right? There's
right.
so many, there's such an occurrence of diagnosis of so many diseases now. And I think there's so much environmentally that we can do to change it within ourselves and pick different items. So the The EWG, the Environmental Working Group, is also very helpful. They have an app called Healthy Living, and you can go to EWG.com and look for that. And you can look for the Think Dirty app as well. Both of those apps give you ideas. Well, I need a sunscreen. Tell me which one I should go get that's not going to maybe give me cancer. And they'll give you a list of items you can get. Same with shampoo and conditioner and everything you can use, you know, really makes a big difference.
Well, when you go down that path and start really, you know, reading, I started reading every single label on anything. First of all, I started eating all fresh fruits and vegetables and lean proteins. And then the things that I was using to cook with that were in a container of sorts, I really started looking at all the labels. And I was shocked at how many things would be in just something so simple, like you said, mustard or something that has sugar or just all these extra additives, preservatives and things. So I just really make a concerted effort now to eat really clean. And eat a lot of fruits, vegetables, and protein. And don't get me wrong, I'm a human being, so I know I'm like you, Chrissy. I do indulge occasionally, only if it's worth it to me. If it's really worth it, and I'm okay with that. I don't beat myself up about it,
right?
Because I, you know, I can only control so much, and the things that I want to control are the things that I try to put, you know, that I put in my body. It's just it's unbelievable.
And that is a great way to have control over things. Absolutely.
A small thing.
Yes.
I mean, you could start really small. Like you said, mascara. You could just try the mascara or just stop eating.
And I will say that Target has a great non-toxic area in their cosmetic section now. They carry a lot of these great lines that are non-toxic ingredients in their lines of makeup and skincare. Yeah, so bring your app on your phone for Think Dirty or Well People, and just scan those items and just take a look at what you're putting on your bodies, you know. And it's amazing because we don't want to get those toxins in our body. Just having stress alone is enough of a toxic to be carrying around. It's hard to get rid of that one on our own, you know.
Well, physiologically, when you are stressed, your body releases tons of hormones and, you know, your adrenal glands are going nuts, and that physiologically has an effect on your body, and trying to keep stress at a minimum is something I'm striving to do, and, you know, work on keeping my life as stress free as possible. And so I've been doing certain things. I'm forever a therapy student, so I'm constantly trying to do new things where, you know, have a gratitude list every day.
Absolutely. Yes.
And, you know, read and educate myself about all the different things that are out there so that I can make well-informed decisions. So it helps me feel like I'm in control of my body as best I can be.
Doing what we do. Yeah, what we can take care of ourselves.
Right.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
That makes a difference. And it's coming from an area, like I always say this, you know, it's like I used to kind of eat to live,
live to eat.
I've switched it around. Yeah, I said that backwards.
Yeah.
Now it's the other way. It really makes a difference what I'm going to put in my body. I don't want to turn this cancer on again, for sure.
Well, let me ask you, I mean, personally for me, when I changed just some simple things in my diet that I was notorious for eating constantly, just things that I would eat all the time, I kind of eliminated those things to see how I felt. And physically, I felt so much better. I had more energy. Mm-hmm. I slept better. I mean, chemo sent me into full-blown menopause, which that's a whole nother topic. Hot flashes, here they come. But I just felt like I lost my train of thought.
You felt better as you were.
Oh, I felt better.
Just because
sorry.
Of the eliminating
I have chemo brain.
Different
foods. Leftover chemo brain.
I know. We can always use that excuse now. Right? I love it. Yeah.
Exactly. No, so I slept better. I didn't have as many aches and pains as I had previously when I get up in the morning. I had this perpetual post-nasal drip that just went away. And I just felt happier than I did prior to that. So when I do fall off the wagon in ways where I start eating things that are not as great for my body, I notice it.
You do
more
notice
often.
It, yes.
I definitely notice it more often.
Yeah. Tell me, Linda, in the shop when breast cancer patients come in, do you notice a lot of them have, like, they're talking like us, where they've made major changes in their lifestyle?
I think after they go through their treatment, or they're getting close to the end of their treatment, they've been fit and they feel comfortable in their clothing and all of that. I think I see more ladies are starting to pay attention to what they're doing and what they're eating. And because when you look at that number 1 in 8, it's usually over the age of 65. And then there's a certain amount of percentage that's BRCA. And that's not controllable. Most of the breast cancer diagnosis, there's no history in the family of breast cancer.
But hello.
And that's the biggest percentage. And I've been in the business long enough to see that diet has so very much to do with it.
Oh yeah.
And I see the girls coming in, because we fit ladies for regular bras too. But I see our younger kids coming in and they're larger, and I think that they're eating more fast food. They have a lot more hormones in them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can't speak as a professional in that area, but I do see it.
Yeah.
And the younger ages of breast cancer diagnosis now is much younger than it used to be, for sure.
Isn't that something? Yeah. It's amazing.
So, yes, I do see people making positive changes, and it's a good thing.
Yeah, it is a good thing. Like, you know, it's I was very fit before I was diagnosed, mm-hmm. but I did have a lot more weight on me, which I cannot believe, to say over 40 pounds more, almost 50 pounds more on me. Mm-hmm. That's one thing. It's like there are over 12 cancers that can be caused by obesity. Did I cause it by doing that? You know, because when I hit 50, it was like, wow, it was really hard to be in control of the weight coming on. And a lot of the diagnosis in breast cancer is over 55, you know. And so keeping our weight in check is a really, really important one. And this is, you know, I mean, I've been a weight loss coach for years, so it's not like I don't know. Mm-hmm. But for some reason, a real shift happened to me. Mm-hmm. There is no problem now. There is no weekend warrior on binging, you know, for me any longer. Yeah, that's just not even going to happen. So it really took a shift. And it's a drag that it took me to be diagnosed with cancer to, like, right? really take it serious here, right. you know, and not, like, lose control. And by Monday morning, I'd have such a whoop-de-doo party on pigging out and whatever over the weekend. And I'd be stuffing myself into my clothes like a stuffed sausage on Monday morning. You know, it's like none of that happens anymore. It's like, you know, I was like the 80-20, you know, like I was really good 80% of the time. And then that 20, wow, you know, let it rip and like eating and, oh yeah, one martini, two martini, three martini floor, right? But I'm telling you, it's like it just can't happen anymore. I can't even go down that road because I can't even fathom putting some of those, like putting sugar in my mouth, cookies, or, I mean, I make great cookies now that are sugar-free, you know? But I can't imagine doing that anymore. And that's what I always think. Did that cause my cancer? Like, you just don't know. So I can only look at it now as what I'm not going to do, what I'm going to avoid to stay in the best control I can to stay as healthy and cancer-free as I can now.
Also, too, when it comes to diet, like you said, you would go into a dark hole for 10 days after your treatment.
Yes.
I remember Dr. Slomowitz telling me that, because I was also about 25, 30 pounds heavier than I am now.
So you too also, yeah.
Same thing. And I wasn't counting calories or doing any of that, really. I was just eating clean food and eating 3 meals a day. So he would always tell me, I don't care if you gain weight, it's when you lose weight that I get really worried.
That's exactly what my doctor said. He said, if we see you losing weight too much, then we know it's the cancer.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's exactly it. Well, I think we're getting really close to closing our show here. I wish we... I know!
Already?
I know, and we have more things to talk about, don't we?
Yes.
Yes, I really, really want to thank you so much for being here. And thank you, Linda,
thank you
so much for what you're doing for the cancer community. It's really helpful to have a safe place. If you could please tell everybody again how they can get in touch with you.
Well, we have a website. It's www.privateaffair.com. You can call me at 805-374-2293, and then you can always email me at aprivateaffair@verizon.net. And if you have any questions about before surgery, what you can get to help, you know, make yourself more comfortable, just give me a call, and or anybody at the store can help. Absolutely. We're happy to help.
Thank you so much, Linda.
Amazing.
And Tracy.
I can be reached at, if anybody wants to call me, or excuse me, email me or Instagram me, you can ask me anything you want about cancer, that, you know, lymphoma or anything.
And
or
as
if
a
you
nurse,
just want someone to talk
from your,
to.
From
yes.
your medical
as a nurse,
position
I,
as well, yes.
I would be happy to listen to anyone. My ears
Thank you.
Are wide open. You can reach me at Tracy Astor, TRACIEASTOR, at hotmail.com. Or you can ask Chrissy where to find me. Or you can reach me on Instagram at Tracy_AstorRN. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. I would like
this
to also just thank our sponsors, Susan Jacobson and Hans Korsmo, that are sponsoring this hour on Accent On for Carol and John Saunders. You can do it, Carol. I'll be back every Monday in December, sitting in as guest host for Ilona Europa's Accent on LA Talk Radio, 6 p.m. Pacific Standard Time. So I hope you can come back here again. You can find me at my website, ChrissyLomax.com, or my Facebook page at Chrissy Lomax, and it's ChrissyLomax. I'm closing this show tonight with a song I wrote and recorded first for my dear friend Susie Miriam, who I lost to breast cancer over 20 years ago. When I was diagnosed, this song took on a whole new meaning, so I had to re-record it again. So in my pajamas and bare feet when I was in treatment, I got this song recorded, and it's called Fragile. So from my guests and myself, Chrissy Lomax, and from my husband, Joe Primo, thank you so much for joining us tonight. And until next week, stay present.
Very fragile right now. I'm very tangled and lost and confused. I'm very fragile right now. I find it hard to keep myself amused. I don't understand how you can leave me out in the storm when I most needed your hand. With my spirit torn, couldn't believe you were so intertwined with yourself not to notice me calling your name. I'm very fragile. Very tangled up in my own blues. I'm very fragile right now. I feel I don't have much left I can lose. Can you tell me how you can keep swimming in water infested with creatures that tear at your armor and never forget to breathe in all your positive energies floating on top of the waves? I'm very fragile right now. I'm very tangled up in what I choose. I'm very fragile. Find it hard to decide what to use. I don't think you don't think I'm as sensitive as I am scared to go on with the fear. I'm not sure I can. Nobody thinks.
I could ever be shy or embarrassed or lacking the strength that I need. But I'm very fragile right now. I'm very fragile right now. Right now.
You're listening to Accent On with Alona Europa, right here on LA Talk Radio.